Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and this is Carl from Deviant Legion and the ISF podcast. And we have a very, very special podcast today. First off, we're going to do a little bit of a clip here. So we want you to listen to this first.
That is me singing with the wind to you. That's me looking from above. That is me whispering with the wind to you. That's me.
That's right.
What, Rachel?
I just, that's it. Like, what else do you say? Oh, my God. Like, tell me who that chanteuse is. But we already know. Holy cow. I heard she was quite a songbird.
And we are very, very happy to welcome Stephen Eckleberry. Stephen, why don't you introduce yourself and give people a little background on your connection with Karen?
Well, I am Karen's widower. We were together for just short of 30 years. And
wow.
Yeah, 26 of those were married. And so, yes, it was an amazing time. And I got to know, I mean, you know, it's, Karen was my life for much of my life. And she loved to sing. And just like in the movie clip you played, she would just start singing at the drop of a hat. You know, she loved singing. And the director of that film, which, by the way, was Born to Win, starring George Segal, who we lost recently, Karen, the director, Yvonne Passer, who became one of Karen's closest friends, he love to use whatever the actor came with, so that he saw that Karen would sing all the time. Said, "Okay, we got to work that in," you know. And then he saw that she loved cats. So in the movie, you'll see all her cats in the movie. So Karen is not a huge part of the film. It's really George's film, but what you see of her, that's really kind of Karen, you know. In her way.
And I'll get back to Ivan Passer, because she was actually in three of his films, which
right.
are all good, but
right.
I particularly love Born to Win. But I do want to pass it over to Rachel, because she does have a question for you. So, Rachel, go right ahead.
You actually, like, that could not have been a more perfect lead-in for what I'm about to ask. Okay, so are Carl and I just really good at picking films that Karen sang in, or is that something that, like, does she put something into, like, every soundtrack she's in, or am I just noticing it because we're good at picking those movies?
Well, I can't deny that you are excellent Karen Black movie pickers, but she did sing
so
quite
far.
A bit. She sang in Five Easy Pieces, In the Car, and as a matter of fact, she sang a song that actually brought Tammy Wynette's song, made it successful, actually. It boosted sales of the song. She sang a song and she was listening to it. And she sang, of course, she played a singer in a few films. She played a singer in Come Back to the Five and Dime Jimmy Dean, of course. But also, Can She Bake a Cherry Pie, that she did with
Henry
Jaglom. Yeah, that's
Henry
right.
Jaglom.
Henry Jaglom.
Right?
Yes. Yes, Henry
well,
Jackman.
See, I was noticing, I was rewatching the picks this morning because I had to go back over it. I watched it like really late at night one night, so I didn't remember all of it. And then, of course, my brain, when I watched it again, was like, oh, it's because they keep mixing French and English and timelines. I get it now. Okay, we're good. But I noticed that the intro song in the movie The Picks, I had to call Carl up. Because, honestly, the copy that they have, that the only available copy you can find right now is on Amazon, and it is the worst edit of a movie I've ever seen. Even with my big TV, the subtitle or the titles, like the credits, are so blurry, I can't see them. So I had to call Carl, and I was like, is that Karen Black? Because I swear to God, I was listening to her music yesterday, and that really sounds like her. So he confirmed for me that yes.
Yes, well, actually, surprisingly, there's a really good version of it on YouTube because I had to go in there recently because one of her big fans messaged me on Facebook and said, oh, our two of the songs I see are on the picks. I said, really? So I actually watched the picks and found it. And sure enough, two of the songs that are on the album, she later developed 2 years later to be in the picks. So, yeah, that is definitely Karen. And that was the kind of the last indie film she did for a while, because right after that, she did The Great Gatsby. As a matter of fact, she was cast in The Great Gatsby while she was making the picks. But yeah, the songs are, I think people are going, hey, great, we get free songs in the end titles. That's cool. And she loved to sing, and so the songs are there. I thought that was actually a really good, really great role of hers. An amazing job.
I was about to say, you were about to get Carl started.
Yes, that's right. It is a brilliant, brilliant role. And she did her usual research, she was a big on research. She spent time with drug addicts and she never was. I mean, I think she smoked some pot a little bit in the 60s, but that's it. She did very little drugs. She really, I think she really captured that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And as Rachel will say, I'm a sucker for religious horror movies. So there you go.
Oh my God. Yes, and I will have to tell you my joke about him. We joke with Carl that
film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go on. Sorry.
No, you go right ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, as a film, it's actually a really interesting structure. The nonlinear structure, I thought, was really inspired. It was a low budget film, but it could have been done better. It's still kind of fresh, and it doesn't seem dated at all. I mean, the structure anyway. Yeah.
No. And of course, that was actually one of the things I went over with Rachel when she rewatched it. I said, you got to remember that there's this structure. There's past and present. And past is Karen, and present is Christopher Plummer.
Right.
Exactly.
So
and we had actually discussed it. Yeah, we had actually discussed it a number of times before I watched the film the first time, and not that it's a forgettable film. I just forgot that I had watched it all the way through until I pulled it up again this morning and I started remembering things. And I was like, okay, so I at least got to this part. And it's like one of those ones where you get towards the end and you're like, okay, I'm pretty sure I watched this whole movie, but I don't remember why it didn't. Like, I kept thinking I hadn't seen
it
before. It
might have been late at night for you. You're a late night person. I'm not. So that could be.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
But anyway, Stephen, tell us about how the album came about and how you found all these demos and tapes that she had done.
Well, Karen worked with Cass McComb starting in 2009. She made a guest appearance on one of his songs, which was Dream Come True Girl. And they just became really good friends. And I think she just took him on as an extra son, really. And he took her on as his mom, kind of, in an artistic sense. So they stayed in touch, and Karen wrote some songs, and she sent him poetry, and they went back and forth. And so she decided to do a couple of more songs, which she recorded. She recorded three more songs with them. And after Karen died, we had a memorial for Karen, and I called Cass and I said, why don't we have Karen sing at her own memorial? So the producer went through the tracks of Brighter and found just the singing part of just Karen singing alone, that track alone. It was clean. You couldn't hear any other instruments. And we had a live orchestra, and they were singing. They were playing to her singing. So it was as if there was a live performance of Karen. It was a remarkable thing. And then Cass said, you know, listen, do you have some footage of Karen you can put together like a music video? Because I'd shot the rehearsal just because I was shooting a lot of stuff as Karen was going through cancer, I did videotape a lot of it. Anyway, so I said, sure, but I got a great idea. Why don't you dress yourself in white, and I'll project Karen's films over you while she's singing. And he thought that was a cool idea. So we met in New York, and I went to a friend's place, and we shot this music video, which you can see. It's called Brighter, and it did actually quite well. And after that, you know, Cass was like, are there some other songs, you know, because I've got these two songs of Karen's, and I'd like to fill it in with maybe we've got a few more, maybe eight songs. I said, sure. She did a demo of this, and she did something here, and I started researching around and finding stuff that she had kind of worked on. And then Karen was a pack rat, really. I mean, she's kept everything, which was a good thing. because Northwestern called me and said, listen, we'd love to take Karen's stuff. And I said, are you kidding? That'd be great. So, you know, because I was paying for storage, and it was really adding up. So they came down to LA, and we went through all the storage. And that's when I found a first set of tapes. And this is 2015, I think. And I was like, wow. And so I told Cass about it. He was very excited. And then later on, I was moving, and I went through all the boxes, every single box, and there were a lot of boxes. Wow. And I found these more tapes, and it was like, Cass, this is insane. And he was so excited. He found an engineer who could take those tapes and put them and digitize them to an audio format that we could work with. And it's a very special process that I can get into. It's very interesting. But anyway, so he said, my God, we got an album. So he called up this record company, Mexican Summer, and said, listen, you know, I've got a couple songs of Karen that I've done with her. And then we found all this vault stuff. Can we put together an album? And they said, sure, you know. And of course, you know, Cass, it was really more about Cass, because Cass has a name in the indie music world. And but it started being more and more about Karen as the music came out. And Cass's original plan was to take these original recordings and kind of do a Beatles anthology type of thing where he would record new stuff. But most of it was so good, he just left it alone. I think he did a couple of little things here and there, but basically it's exactly what was recorded all those years ago.
Wow.
So that is the long answer.
Well, you know, I mean, if you take a look at things like YouTube, I was doing a lot of research, and she would be on Saturday Night Live, for example, but she always sang. So
yes.
So there's a lot more out there, and as I was going through, unfortunately, a lot of that material, the audio has degraded and such, so it's not good quality, but the fine tapes that were that good quality. How fortuitous is that? I mean, luck, whatever
so
you
fortuitous.
Want to call
And I got to say, we lost a bunch of them. I mean, there are some tapes with tantalizing names on them. She sang, there are a bunch of stuff, but we just, you know, unfortunately there was an incident where we were storing all her stuff, and we had so much stuff that I got this cheap storage place, and I didn't watch the roof, and there was a leak, and so there's mildew, so we had to throw out a whole bunch of her stuff. But so she kept all these tapes. And Elliot Mazur is a famous producer in the early 70s. He worked with Neil Young, Bob Dylan, the band, Linda Ronstadt. I mean, he was a huge. And so you know, he had a professional recording set up in 1971 when she went to Nashville to work with him. And so, and he gave her the quarter inch, you know, those are the original tapes. He kept all this time. Now, you can't put an old master audio tape in a machine and play it. It just will disintegrate. You have to do a special process called baking, which is you actually put the tapes in an oven at 200 degrees. It's a special oven. You bake the tape for several hours, and it keeps the magnetic material on the acetate long enough so that you can hit play and bring the audio in to a digital medium. But you only get one shot. If you screw that up, that's it. You have lost that material. So it's kind of a hair-raising thing. And Cass did find the best engineer for that in San Francisco. So all the tapes were baked. I forgot your question, but I think I...
No. I was basically saying how the tapes were so fortuitous. And you said a lot of them had been lost. Now, I had read something that made my heart skip.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you that Rachel disagrees with me, but I'm a huge Randy Newman fan. And I hear
there was
an empty box.
Yeah, I know. You have to understand that Randy Newman, you think of him as kind of a cute guy, but he's done some beautiful songs. I know what you mean. You know, I love L.A. and Short People and all that. Yeah, okay, fine. But he has some great, great material. And Karen had told me that she had met Randy. I didn't know that they had recorded together. There's also a recording that she did with Kris Kristofferson, which I have somewhere, but it belongs to... I think it's MGM, so I don't know if I can use it. So there are recordings all over the place. She was also famous among her friends for leaving long, detailed voice messages, and it would drive some people crazy, but other people were smart enough to save them. And I have a friend who would just save boxes of them. I mean, just in the old-fashioned little reel-to-reel, little mini tapes, and she would often sing on those. So there's all kinds of stuff. You know, she just was kind of a frustrated singer, but in a way, but she really wanted to be an actress first. And so that went for, you know, that's what came first. Now, had there been a musical at the time, had there been a Mamma Mia or something, she would have sang and people would have known. I mean, there was Nashville, of course. She sang, she wrote and sang her songs and got nominated for a Grammy. So it's not like she wasn't singing in movies, but she probably would have done more. It just, in the 70s, it was just kind of a different time, really. And when she had time to develop her act in the 80s, it was a different deal. It was a different, she wasn't as famous. She wasn't as, she couldn't just, you know, you couldn't have people say, oh my God, she wants to do a record. Wow, let's sign her. You know, it wasn't quite the same thing, but she developed this incredible act, which many people have seen. And I actually have a few recordings of that, which I'm trying to restore. But when she could exploit, to use a bad term, exploit her career as a singer, it wasn't such a hot thing. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
It would have been better in the early 70s. Yeah.
But you know, one of the things that I noticed about her singing, and I really focused on it, is that depending on the stylism, you know, she would be country. Then she'd be a chanteuse. Then you know, there are so many different styles. And I'm going to play a song now. And this is off the new album. And this is called Thank God You're Mine. And then I've got some comments on it afterwards. Come on. Here we go.
To know that I am sitting out on my front porch right now, and I don't know if you can hear them, but the cicadas and June bugs were an absolutely perfect complement to that music right there. That was so beautiful.
Yeah.
So can
yeah,
you tell
that's
me,
a beautiful
Stephen,
song. It's yeah.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. So I just wanted to ask, can you estimate when that was recorded? Was that one of the new songs she had done?
No, that was 1976, pretty sure, because she worked with Bones, who was more of a country guy, and she was married to Kit Carson, and he was from Texas, and also she had just done Nashville. That was all part of that thing.
I figured. Now the interesting thing about. Okay, so I am a musician and I am a choir director and I work with soloists right now, but the interesting thing about her singing is she was not a trained singer, but sometimes that's a benefit, and the thing that I really find interesting is the difference in timbre between her lower register and her higher register. And I think that's just captivating.
Yeah, it is captivating. She would often, you know, talk about singing her low. She liked singing in her high voice, and really a lot of us, including myself included, preferred her in her low voice. She actually was a trained singer. She trained to, like all actresses and actresses of her time, she learned singing and dancing as part of her training. She came to New York in 1960, I think it was, with $20 in her pocket and knew no one. And she started going on auditions. And we're talking cattle calls. And if you know what a cattle call is, you got 1,000
people. I know
exactly
what a cattle call is.
It is hell. But from a cattle call, she got a role in the original production of Something Funny Happened on the Way to the Forum.
Wow.
Yeah, and so she had to sing for that audition. She had trained, so she wasn't an untrained singer. She wasn't a musician in so much as that she really, you know, well, let's change the key or let's do this. I mean, she wasn't really a trained musician, but she had done vocal training and quite a bit of it. And actually, one of her early boyfriends was Paul Sorvino, who, you know, was training to be an opera singer, if you know anything about Paul Sorvino. And he brought it to a bel canto teacher, and she learned bel canto singing. So she learned a bunch of different styles. And in her singing act, which hopefully I can find some footage, she has a whole routine about how she was trained in all these different styles. And it's very funny because first she did bel canto, and then she did all these different things. So, yeah, no, so I take a little bit of issue with that. Not completely. She wasn't, you know, she wasn't a comfortable singer. She wasn't a person who could
just...
Okay,
that's a better way to put it. That's a better way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah, like, for example, Ronnie Blakely was a good friend of hers. And Ronnie was such a natural singer that when Karen would sing at a party, Ronnie could sing, harmonize for a song that she had never heard as she was singing it. You know, that's how good Ronnie is. Karen didn't have that kind of ability, but she had that kind of ability. And even though she would sing at the drop of a hat in private life or, well, at the supermarket to the horror of all her children, talk about an embarrassing mom. She would sing all the time. But when it came to singing professionally on a stage, she would have to rehearse and plan and get ready. It was not something she could do at a drop of a hat. But if you could told her, hey, sorry, last minute, we need somebody to shoot a scene tomorrow morning. Can you be there at 6? She would say, sure, no problem. She had no backup on that. So that's kind of the difference.
Well, you also know, in that verified something for me, because, you know, when I hear her do different songs and different stylisms, there was different tonal and tone to her voice. You know, if she's doing something country, she'd have a little twang. I've got another song which we'll play here soon, I Want Two Lips, which is from Gypsy 83. Gypsy 81, excuse me. But that has a whole different feel to it. And so, you know, that makes sense, what you just said, that she was trained in various ways. Now, Rachel, I know that you, we were just talking about Gypsy a couple minutes ago, and you say you love that movie. So talk a little bit about that film.
Well, I'm doing this really quick because I'm hoping it's not one of those movies that has the same title. No, come on. Oh, you need to put your numlock on your laptop. There we go, Gypsy X. Nope, that's the one I'm thinking about. Girl Obsessed with Stevie Nicks, all the... Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it
so
is
that's one of those movies.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of... one of those great, one of those rash of 90s indie films. Yeah, Road
Yeah,
movie.
It's a 90s.
Film.
Well, actually, it was 2001, I think. But it is. It's a 90s road drama indie film that is one of our favorite things, Carl. It is very LGBTQ friendly.
Yes.
In fact, that's a lot of the storyline is basically, obviously, it's a road trip movie, personal discovery, all that bullshit. It's one of those ones that I connected with a lot because of the time it was played. Now, Carl, you know the story. You actually, I talked about this on one of our last shows. The reason that Scotland, PA was so special to me was because of the time that I saw it first, and we discussed that a lot about movies. And when I first saw this movie, it was around the same time as Scotland, PA, and that was during the period where my friend was working at Blockbuster, and we were able to get all of these crazy indie movies that most people hadn't seen. And we both really connected with some of the characters in the movie just for personal reasons. She connected much more with the main character, whereas I connected with the tiny gothy best friend. But I do remember Karen in that movie now, and it's just been so long since I've seen it that I forgot that she was even in it, to be very honest, and I feel bad about that. But you know, it's also one of those movies where they pick up hitchhikers and stuff, and of course the hitchhiker's going to throw a wrench in the mix, and it's just delightfully odd, and the problems, the personal problems that all these people have with themselves that they're basically working on in the movie are not quite your usual issues. It's not like, I hate my mom and dad. I'm going to go run away because I'm 17 and I'm a fucking adult, man. It's not quite like that. It's actually pretty dramatic and little gut-wrenching, if I do say
yeah,
so.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I really like about the film is Karen's role. Because they walk into this bar, and of course you got the goth, and it's more of a shit kicker bar. But Karen really takes them under wing for a while, and we're going to play a song now called "I Want Two Lips," which is from that film. So we're going to play that right now.
Jesus Christ, Carl, are you trying to get us slammed by the SEC? That was, like, almost too hot to play on the air. Gee, wow.
The interesting thing, I want to say this to Stephen, is when you listen to that song, I see her draped over a piano. And nothing against Michelle Pfeiffer, but she should have been in the Fabulous Baker Boys instead of Michelle. Sorry.
Sure. I'm pretty sure a lot of people will listen to that song and see her draped over a whole lot of things. No offense to you, Mr. Eckleberry, but yeah, that was pretty hot.
But the vocal sense of it too is so much different. And that's one of the reasons I picked that song, because she sounds like a chanteuse. Seriously,
yeah, well, you know,
I hear a little Edith Piaf in that.
She was keeping in mind her character. She always came from a character point of view, so her singing was often character based, and so she would have kept in mind her character. I took it for granted. I'll be honest. Really, that she sang, because she sang so much. But I was talking to her sister recently, and her sister said that their singing teacher when they were kids had said that Karen had perfect pitch, and it's possible. You don't always keep your perfect pitch, but I think she probably did have either the perfect pitch or perfect relative pitch. It was really amazing. But you reminded me of something, is that Steve Balderson did a film, and she sang in that as well. And it's a great song, and you should pull that one up. But it's not that was – what is the name of that film? Oh, well. It was – well, is it Steve Balderson? Yeah, it was Steve Balderson. And she sang an Edith Piaf film, strangely enough. You'll have to pull that up. And as a matter of fact, Firecracker. That's right. It was Firecracker.
Okay.
And in Firecracker – yeah, I think she found the song, and she didn't write it this time, but you got to pull that up. If you like her chanteuse, the chanteuse Karen, that would be the one.
Okay. I'm going to try to look for it now and see if I can pull it up.
She sings in it was, I forget it. Sorry. Anyway, it's a famous Edith Piaf song.
Okay. Yeah, I'm seeing the stuff from Nashville and that, but I'm not coming. That's not coming through. I'll have to try to find it and maybe put it on one of our subsequent podcasts.
Unfortunately, the way our system works is we have to record from an outside source and then import everything into the system. So even if we could find the song right now, we wouldn't be able to play it for everybody, which is
But something to look forward to.
Oh, we totally would if we had the capability. I mean, ask Carl. Like, I'm pretty sure he's hands down would go for that in a heartbeat. But
absolutely. If I would have found it, I would have gotten it in somehow.
Yeah, exactly. J'attendrai, I think, is the song she sings, and she sings it in French.
Oh wow! So it is Edith Piaf. Good Lord. That's wonderful. I have to really check that out.
Yep, you will.
So I wanted to at least mention something as far as with me is that I'm much older than Rachel, and I grew up. I consider the 70s when I hit puberty and became an adult and. The films, I was very lucky to be in a special place at the time where I was seeing a lot on early HBO and various things. So those 70s films to me are just, you know, some of the greatest work she's ever done. And unfortunately, there's many, much of that is not as well known. And I wanted to to ask you, and not just the 70s, but in your estimation, what movies did she do that are under the radar that our listenership should check out that you think she did a really good job in?
The Grass Is Singing.
So tell us a little bit about that one, because I don't know that one at all.
Well, unfortunately, it was renamed Killing Heat, which is really stupid. But it's a Doris Lessing novel, and it's one of the Doris Lessing novels that is not a science fiction novel. And it's set in South Africa in the 40s or in 50s. And Karen, you watch this character slowly descend into madness. This kind of very uptight woman. And the research she did on that was, a lot of it was the accent. And I got to tell you, Meryl Streep is a great actress, but she did not nail the South African accent the way Karen did. It is a very, very difficult accent. And she managed to nail that. She was big on accents. And that is an incredible film that she should have been had won something for, but it just, I don't know. It was too foreign, I guess. Who knows? It's a good film. That would be one. There are very few films that she actually stars in, really, like she is the leading role. And that is a shame. And I think it's one of the reasons that that Trilogy in Terror does so well is because she was the star of it. She had such power. I'm actually looking through here.
Now you mentioned Trilogy of Terror.
Yeah.
I heard through the grapevine that she actually was not, she had a difficult relationship with that film. Let's put it that way.
With David Lucas?
Not with David Lucas, with the film itself. With
movie are we talking about? No.
Somehow...
She loved making films. She loved Dan Curtis. She loved Dan Curtis. And she just regrets making the film because it got her on this horror thing. And she was known as a great actress, a dramatic actress. And she had turned it down, and her manager had stayed in her house until the wee hours in the morning until she said yes, and because she just she didn't want to do it. So and it kind of got her on this horror event. And of course, she was so good that she became a big horror name, and she did a bunch of horror films. But she turned down – she thought her career was getting better after – in the early 2000s. So she turned down the sequel to Rob Zombie's film, House of a Thousand Corpses. She just didn't want to be doing that. She didn't want to be doing that. So, she kind of had a resistance to it. And then also she also understood that people really loved her in horror films. She said, okay, so she accepted it. But I'm going over here, films that she's done. She had in the late 80s, early 90s, she did a lot of films that were not great. But she did a few, like she did Reuben and Ed in the early 90s.
By the way, we're going to have Trent Harris on.
I love Trent. Well, tell him hi for me.
I will, absolutely.
Yeah. She was, I think, I got to say that even though she had a very unhappy time in it, she really was incredible in The Day of the Locust. But that's not unheralded. Everyone acknowledges that. She told me a funny story about that. Well, not funny. It's kind of sad. But the Price Waterhouse guy came up to her, I think it's at the Academy Awards, and said, "You know, I probably shouldn't tell you this, but you were like 3 votes short of getting nominated on that film. I was like, oh, okay, great. And so that was a very difficult shoot for her, and she was sad she did it. I think Come Five and Dime is an incredible job.
Oh, listen, and we almost did that as a commentary watch, and I just for Pride Month. That is an amazing film, and she is just so good in that film. Seriously.
Well, yeah, she's incredible. She really is. I saw it recently. It's an amazing performance. Now, I'll tell you something interesting. Even though the filmmaking is not necessarily great, but the work she did in Can She Bake a Cherry Pie, it's her. The work, that is kind of what Karen is like. That was Karen in a way, you know, a more neurotic version of Karen in Can She Bake a Cherry Pie. But the work she did was not so much in the acting, but in the writing, because the script was basically a couple of pages of notes. There was no script, and they shot it in 6 days. And she is really, really a good writer. So she knew Michael Emil, and she knew Michael Emil, had known him for years, so she knew what he would say to things. And so she would set him up by saying something, and then he would react, and she created a little storyline. She added the thing about how she was pregnant and all these different things. So the improvisation that she did in Can She Bake a Cherry Pie was more than just improvisation, because the whole thing is improvised. It was writing improv. Like, she was thinking, well, how is this scene going to fit in with the end of the movie? Is this going to make the story work? And she was thinking as a screenwriter, improvising. And in that sense, that is an amazing role. She said that she was every night she'd come home and just went right to sleep. It was unbelievably hard work on her. There was just a lot of mental work on her because she was writing. So that's something that people don't probably know. And I would say that for that alone, it's worth it.
Now, by the way, that would be one of the films I would have mentioned, because I thought she was absolutely fantastic in that film.
Absolutely. Seriously. Incredible. Pretty damn good in Children of the Night, if you want to see horror films, with Tony Randall, who I think is a brilliant director.
He's a very good director.
Incredible. I really respect his work. He's incredible. But anyway, she was amazing in that. I mean, really, really, almost too good, because she plays like what a vampire would be like if a vampire existed in real life. She's just like, oh, Jesus, that is evil. There's nothing, you know, nothing almost sexy about it. It's just like, oh, my God, I want to suck your blood. And like, it really makes you scared. You know, it's brilliant. Let's see. I'm going through. Yeah. Well, there was a couple of cool films she did the night. Not a lot. I like what she did in Charades, my film. She was brilliant in that, I thought, which she wrote too with me. She co-wrote. We both rewrote it together. So there's a couple of really indie films that she did. Mascara. She became. It's a sweet film. Linda Kandel is the director. It was with Ione Sky. And she became best friends with Linda Kandel from that. They just became very close. So that's unique for that. There was little things, 2004, America Brown. I remember when she was working on the accent, she had a way of working on accents that was peculiar. She didn't have an expert that she would hire. She would find a person that was from that area, and it was very specific. She said, what part of Texas is this person from? Okay. And then she'd find a person from that part of Texas. Says, oh, and she would call him and say, do you know of a, well, I'm not from there, but my sister's brother is. And she'd call and, no, I don't really have an accent. You know, she would write down phonetically every single vowel and get it exactly right. And she would get kind of, it was a real shame, because you'd get other people who were doing this generic Southern accents, that were just, you know, caricatures, and she just didn't bother at all. There is a film, I guess, that I should say that she really was going to, I don't remember the name of it. There's been so many here. But she did an incredible job in Red Dirt. Just really amazing performance. It's kind of a nod to Tennessee Williams. It was an odd film, but there's some really beautiful parts to it. And she, what is that word? Someone who's scared of going outside. The agoraphobe.
No, agoraphobe.
And yet she plays an old Southern belle type of thing. And incredible role, unbelievable role.
Now you can ask Carl. Yeah. It is great that you bring this up, and this is something that I can verify for you folks. All of you who've listened to this show before know me, know my feelings on Southern accents and movies. Obviously, I'm not faking this shit, okay? But I don't notice it as much until it's not authentic enough.
Right.
Like it, and I have never once had a problem with Karen Black in any of her accents in a movie, but Carl would ask me if we were talking about a specific movie where she did an accent. He would have already asked me like an hour ago, okay, Rachel, how do you feel about the accent? So coming from the Deep South, I really appreciate the effort she makes to understand, because it really is all in where you're from. I mean, I'm in Arkansas, small state, but if you go to another county, people talk different. And it's very much in the dialect and how people pronounce things and what words they use. And that's the only way you can make it really authentic, is to know exactly where your character is from. So
right.
that is another amazing thing to put on the checklist of awesome things that Karen Black did in her day. So,
you know, I wish she'd taught some. She didn't want to teach. She really didn't want to teach, but she had a lot to pass on. She did, and I should have done more too. But I was, you know, also involved in my own career. But she did. She had real amazing ways, techniques in acting that were unique and original that nobody else. She was not a method actress in the classic sense of the word, and she was a complete method actress in another sense. She had her own way of looking at acting, which I thought was spectacular. One of the things she did, for example, is she would, when this is when I first was with her, she had me work lines with her, and she had to be able to do all the lines in the scene 10 times perfectly. And so I would play the other characters and she would read her lines. If she missed one, she'd reset the clock. So it had to be 10 times perfectly. So that means she probably did it 20 times to get it perfectly. And the reason she did that is that she wanted to be free of thinking about lines. So many actors mm-hmm. I've worked with are constantly thinking about their lines, and they're hiding it, and they have all these clever acting techniques for hiding the fact that they're trying to remember their damn lines. And Karen didn't have that, because she knew her lines so cold that she could just be in the scene. So that's the kind of work that she did. And it, I think being a stage actress on Broadway really did help. She was very, very disciplined. One of the most disciplined persons I knew. Very high standards for herself.
A couple of films I want to mention. And as I said, I grew up in the 70s. So, you know, you'd see her constantly in films. And you talked about Ivan Passer and Born to Win. I also want to talk about Law and Disorder, which I really like. And at the time it was dismissed. And that's unfortunate, but that's a wonderful film. And also you verified that they became good friends, because she worked with him at least 3-4 times.
Oh yeah,
but that was a film I wanted to mention. Of course, we mentioned The Picks, which I think is just brilliant. I absolutely. Anyone who's listening to this, if you have not seen The Picks, go to YouTube and watch it. It is unbelievably good.
It's really good.
And let's not forget that she worked with.
Yeah, it holds up.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Sorry. Let's not forget that she worked with Hitchcock.
Yeah.
And Family Plot.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, also opposite one of my favorite character actors, Bruce Stern.
Yeah. She and Bruce, they were friends. Not close friends, but, you know, they had a mutual respect, and he was really kind to her in her last days and afterwards. You know, she was just a – and of course, she starred with him in the film that Jack Nicholson directed.
Right. Drive, he said.
Drive, you said, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what can I say about that? She said that Karen was a very literate person. She was a grammar Nazi. Her mom was an author. And so she loved playing word games with Hitchcock. And he would try to catch her and use fancy words, and she would, you know, say the definition of it. And so she was very playful. She did say he kissed her and stuck his tongue down her mouth, and she thought it was a little bit surprised, but she just kind of took it in, you know, it was, I mean, I guess in Me Too times, it's like, what? But for her, she just like, you know.
Oh, well.
one of those things. But really not her kind of director. Yeah, exactly. Not her kind of director, because it was all planned. You know, everything was so planned. But he was a good director, and then he let her do whatever she wanted. It was fine, you know. Oh, yeah, he would give her strange directions, which doesn't work for actors. But she was able to do it. She would say, I want to see a shadow fall across your face. Like, how the fuck do you do that?
That's a good question.
Okay, you know, that is not a good acting. You know, but she would do it. She'd have to work backwards. It's a very hard way of working, but she'd work backwards and she'd get it and she'd do it. So, you know, she's brilliant as always. And she has a lot of funny stories to say about that, which she wrote. I'll have, when I get, hopefully if I can get a little money from this album, I will be able to justify sitting down and getting her autobiography finished and other things. So I'm hoping to do that.
And one other film that I think we need to at least touch on, because it was the first film I really noticed her in, and she blew me away. And she's with Jack Nicholson. Of course, I'm talking about Five Easy Pieces. Jack
of
Nicholson,
course.
You know, everyone thinks of Jack Nicholson in that movie and the scene in the diner. But her work as Rayette was just phenomenal.
Yeah. Yes.
Seriously.
Oh, it's incredible. No, and as a matter of fact, sorry, I forgot the director's name.
Bob Rafelson.
Bob Rafelson said, well, I think you're too smart to play this role. He wanted her for the other role, for the, you know, one that ends up with Jack.
Right.
And she said, that's okay. I just will stop thinking once you say action, you know. And so she, incredible work, incredible. You know, she's nominated for it, thank God.
Absolutely.
Didn't
and
win
she
for
was
stupid
deserved.
Reasons.
Seriously.
What's that? Yeah,
well,
it's typical. You know, she's a new actress. Now, by the way, getting back to the song, the album.
Right.
I realized what happened and why she never did that album, because she was supposed to go back to Nashville and do the album. And what happened was the Academy Awards were in April that year. Pretty sure it was April 1971. And so therefore the announcements for who was nominated came out in probably around March. So she goes to do this album in Nashville with Elliot Mazur, and she's a promising young actress. You know, she's just a promising actress. hip actress. And then out of the blue, she gets nominated. And suddenly, uh-oh, you know, you want to go to Nashville and do what? No, honey, you've been nominated for, we got to cash in these chips. And so she had to relent because of that. It explains why she didn't pursue that album then.
Well, you know, luckily with your work and everything, we now have an album of Karen singing. So please give us the information and that. And of course, I can tell people that it's available on I got it through Spotify, but it's streaming now. But if they want to buy a copy of it, how do you do that?
Amazon Prime Dreaming of You is what it's called. And you can also download it on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
But also, if you want to get the actual album, you have to go to anthology.net. And you go to anthology.net. Scroll down, you'll see the album, and you can actually get the LP, which is cool. And I love
that
it's such a thing now that people have LPs. I think it's so cool.
Back in the day, collected vinyl and sold vinyl. So to see vinyl coming back and outselling CDs, I'm jumping up and down in joy.
I know.
To say the least.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool, isn't it? Yep.
Well, Stephen, I want to thank you very, very much for joining us tonight. And if there's anything else that you ever need to promote or that sort of thing, please let us know. Seriously.
I will be so happy.
If you ever get that autobiography out there, you got to come back.
Oh,
oh
my God,
no,
yes.
It's happening. I have
wouldn't.
A friend who's working with me. Yeah.
I would read through that in a
actually,
night.
Probably the most likely thing is that I come out with a coffee table book with pictures and stuff. And I'm so thankful for Northwestern because there have been interns for the last several years spending their summers organizing Karen Black's stuff. So that's cool.
Okay. So we're going to do a little thing called housekeeping. Please keep with us for a second.
Okay.
We go through what's coming up. Okay.
Yeah.
And so at this point, just a moment here, let me get in here. Tomorrow, as I mentioned to you, Stephen, beforehand, we have Dan Kramer coming in, Daniel Kramer. Daniel Kramer is a indie director out of San Francisco. And his most recent film, which I was very, very lucky to be at the New York City premiere, Overwhelm the Sky, is now released through Kino Lorber. Daniel is a very unique filmmaker. He did a three-hour movie on weekends in black and white with basically roadshow presentation, which means overture, intermission, and then exit music. The film is very interesting, based on an old American novel from the 1800s, I believe. I don't have it in front of me what the novel is, but he has numerous films that he's put out. He also has done several commentaries on films, and we'll be talking to him. On Thursday, we have Limes Marshall. Now, you may remember Limes was part of our group. And the Prodigal Son Returns, because he's been working on a project of his own, and we're going to be talking about that. So we're very happy to welcome Limes back.
He's got all the fancy NDAs and stuff now. So we're going to try to scoop
absolutely.
All the gossip we can.
And then on Friday, we have Mel Brooks. We're going to be doing a show with Mel Brooks with Adam Perens in the Cathode Ray Mission. And both Rachel and I will be on that. And then on Saturday, we're going to do a commentary watch on one of Mel Brooks' films, and that would be the 12 Chairs. Which is one of his unknown films, if there is such a thing, with Mel Brooks. So that's what we have coming up this week. Again, Stephen, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Super big ditto
You're
on that.
Welcome.
Like, thank you.
Fun. Yes, absolutely. Well, it's been a pleasure speaking to you guys, and we'll do it again soon.
Okay, fair enough. And thank
okay.
you very much, folks. We're going to call this a night, but we're going to go back and listen to I'd Like Two Lips. So we're going to listen to that again, okay, before we go.
Great.
I'm sorry, but it's the way
Great.
I am. All right, folks.
You get your
thank
fix,
you very
Carl.
Much.
I'm... Okay. Everybody
yeah.
have a good
Bye,
night.
Bye. Talk to you soon. And give my best to
Daniel. I will do so. I will do
okay,
so,
great.
Stephen. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good thing.
Okay, bye.
So taking it out
okay.
on two lips, Carl.
Absolutely. Hold on. I have to get there now. One of my – oh, there's the studio. Okay, and here we go. Two Lips.
By Karen Black.
I love this.
I want a little.
With that one. Good night, everyone. Yep, I agree. Good night. Say good night, Rachel.